Okay, but thankfully we have source sheets. Ethan, if I could have one. Master would be fine. That's actually a theme of tonight's share, being a master. Okay, so we began. You'll also note part of the glitch was that we have the same title as last week. Again, that's a glitch, not intentional. So you could be creative. Actually, at the end of tonight's shiur, based on the theme, we'll take a vote, proposals for the title, so that when we put it up on the website and for posterity, we can actually have the correct name. We began the last week in our continuation now in our second year of study of Bereishis. You'll do me. Take a picture at some point, including the whole class. In other words, me and the class. Not just, I'm saying, not just a headshot or something. Okay, didn't know. Okay. So we continued last week by beginning the psukim here in the middle of Perek Beis, which discuss the transition of Adam as a soul creature, apparently in Gan Eden, and now to the creation of Chava. Last week was the famous pasuk of Lo Tov Hayos Adam Levado, it's not good for man to be alone. And as last week's title, still on this week's sheet, reminds us, the question that we asked last week primarily was, why not? What about Adam was lacking, and therefore what about Chava would hopefully complement that lack? Continuing on, and I'd like to do two more psukim tonight, which will set the stage for our next shiur, which will discuss the actual description of the creation of Chava. We have two more psukim, which was, as mentioned last week, and I think correctly, by Ruthie Shane, which at first glance seems to be out of order and superimposed in a way that it doesn't belong. But if we look closely and particularly study the Medrash and some of the commentaries, we will see that, in fact, it serves a very primary and central thematic role in Adam's development and then the now inevitable creation of Chava. So where we left off is in Perek Beis, Pasuk Yotes, and we will be focusing primarily on the next two psukim, which again set the stage for Pasuk Chaf Aleph, which is when Adam is actually put into that deep sleep and Chava is explicitly created. So let's read those two psukim, and then we'll try to identify what issues need to be explained, as well as then beginning to see some of the sources and how that is accomplished. So the Torah tells us, again, on the heels of the pasuk of Lo Tov Hayos Adam Levado, it's not good for man to be alone, and therefore Hashem is telling Noach, Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. Pasuk Yotes tells us, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim min ha'adama, and God formed or created from the ground, Kol Chayas Asada, all of the animals and chayos here are wild animals of the field, Dafka the Sada, they're wild animals, they're in the field, yes, Kol of Hashemayim, all the birds of the heavens, v'yavei el ha'adam, and they were all brought to Adam, l'ros ma yikre lo, now how do you translate the lo here? It's a difficult pasuk to translate, and it's going to get more difficult. In order for him to see what to call, I would have thought it would have been them, but that's not how the theme sounds. He brought all the animals to see what to call them, right? But that's not lo. So perhaps that refers to each individual animal, each one. V'chol, and here's the most difficult part of the pasuk, v'chol asher yikra lo ha'adam, and all that Adam will call each one of them, respectively, nefesh chaya hu shemo. How do you translate, and really not so much translate, but make sense out of those last four words? Nefesh chaya, a living soul, hu shemo, will be its name. Hashem is not going to give them a name, or is Nefesh Chaya going to be the name?
Characteristics of that being.
It's very, very unclear. And we will see.
Generic.
It's not just.
Individual.
Say again? Nefesh Chaya, I want to point out two things. Number one is Nefesh Chaya is usually used, we made a big deal out of the fact that it's limited to Noach. And now we see it applied to, Adam. And now we see this being applied even to other creatures. But second of all, more than that, the whole phrase, Noach will give them a name, and when he gives them a name, their name will be Nefesh Chaya, forever. So this is the basis of a major discussion between Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban, and we will see that in Mirza Shem at the conclusion of the shir. But
Nefesh Chaya was used for Rameses for the other creatures as well.
Right, but what I'm referring to is when Adam was created here, we have the famous pasuk Where is it? Pasuk Perek Beis Pasuk was a Ches.
But Perek Aleph Pasuk.
Yes, I understand. V'yipach ba'apav nishmas chayim v'hi ha'adam l'nefesh chaya, which is understood by Unculus and then successive Mefarshim as describing something unique to Adam. So the point, more than being unique to Adam or not, I shouldn't really not have mentioned that. That wasn't my main point. The main point which the Mefarshim struggle with is just how to make sense of the flow of the second half of that pasuk.
If you look at it from the derech pshat, the chol would refer to hushmo, everything they eat. The chol asher yikra hushmo. It didn't specify, but in other words, in effect.
Fine, but what do you do with the nefesh chaya?
Well, presumably describing Adam.
Okay, so you are mechavin, not to a Rashbaum, but to a Ramban. But Rashi and Ebenezer, for example, do not read it that way at all. So it's a difficult pasuk, but I'm glad we're struggling with it. Let's just see pasuk chaf. Interesting for the Baal Korei, there's a shlishi here, even though really it's a continuation, so to speak. V'yikra ha'adam shemos l'chol ha'behema. So now that they've all been brought, we were told it's going to happen, so now it's implemented. These animals are brought before Adam, and he calls them names. Not only behema, ulof ha'shamayim, chochayas ha'sadeh. And then, somewhat almost poignantly and almost sadly, we're told, but nu nebuch Adam lo matza ezer kenegdo. All these animals, it's not an empty world, he's not living in a barren wasteland, but nevertheless, Adam is lonely, he doesn't have his ezer kenegdo. What do you notice in Pasuk Chaf, this second Pasuk, which was added, which was not in Pasuk Yotes? Behema, the word behema. Behema refers to domesticated animals. So in Pasuk Yotes, it says that all of the wild animals and birds will be brought before Adam. And then it says in Pasuk Chaf that all of the domesticated animals and birds and wild animals will be brought before Adam. There is clearly an addition of behema here, which was not there in the previous Pasuk. Okay, so these are some of the issues which need to occupy your attention now. Again, setting the stage for the dramatic, and I'm not sure if it's more dramatic for the women in the room or the men in the room. We would have been lonely without you. Then, of course, the pivotal change of all world and human history with the explicit creation of Chava, which we'll take up next time. Mm-hmm. So let's go back now and see primarily, again, in that juxtaposition, most of the Mefarshim we'll be seeing tonight were focused primarily on Pasuk Yetes, but on one particular issue, the issue of Behema, of course, we will see, obviously, that the Psukim have to be compared and contrasted in order to hopefully come up with something that makes sense. So let's take a look at Rashi. There's a very important Rashi here on Pasuk Yotes, which tells us three things. The first two are just worth noting for Rashi in and of itself, not necessarily a need for huge commentary in addition. But then the third point which Rashi makes, that will then lead into some additional commentary. So Pasuk Yotes and Rashi, right at the beginning of the Yitzer, Min Ha'adama, and Hashem formed out of the ground. So the first thing that Rashi seems to be bothered by is, now what day is this? When is all of this happening? On the sixth day. Now, the Pasuk is telling us that Hashem formed out of the ground the wild animals and the birds. Well, when did he do that? You get the impression that it's happening now. But it didn't. It all happened already. The animals were formed earlier that day, before Adam. And the birds were formed on the fifth day. So that's the first problem that Rashi is clearly bothered by. A second problem, who remembers? What did we learn in Perek Aleph when we were told about the birds? Where were the birds formed from? Of what matter? The water, not the land. Yet here, the Pasuk tells us that God formed. Again, so when did it happen and from what did it happen? Again, Nachamo, again, inconsistencies with what we previously thought we knew about the creation. So it comes along Rashi, it's based on a Medrash and a Gemara in Masechta Chulin, and Rashi tells us the following. Hu Yitzira Ki Asiya. Forming is really the same thing as making. Ha'amur Lamala. It's not talking about anything new that's happening now. It's a reference to the Asiya Lamala, the thing which already happened beforehand, namely the Pasuk Vayas Elokim Eschayas Aretz, etc., etc., where we know that Hashem already made these animals. It's just being referenced here. Ella, meaning Ba Upirish Perash. Now it's coming. Our Pasuk is coming and explained. And once we now know the relationship between when these things happened, now we're left with the second issue, which is what were the birds made out of? The water as a natural ingredient, or the land? Says the Chazal, as Rashi quotes it, Sha'ofos nivru min harakak. Rakak is like a type of a mud, which is basically, if you will, it's like the beach. It's the type of land that is right on the water. It's a moist, wet mud. It's not some mud in the dirt in the desert. It's not dry land, and it's not actual water. It's a mixture of the two. Namely, and this is how we have to explain it, because after all, Amar Lamala, as we had previously learned, min hamayim nivru'u. Right, in Pasuk Perek Aleph Pasuk Chaf, we were told that the birds are created from the water. V'kan amar min ha'adama nivru'u. And here we are learning that they were created from the ground. What's the synthesis? Right, classic thesis, antithesis. Synthesis, namely, says Rashi, again, it's quoting Chazal, that they were created from this type of a mud. Okay, interesting. I don't know what profound lessons there are to be learned about where the birds are created from, but again, it is just an interesting and classic illustration of Chazal's, sensitivity to the nuance, as well as their struggle to resolve even the most subtle of descriptions in the Torah. Rashi continues, V'od, Lemedcha Kan, it's also, furthermore, it's taught here, Shebshat Yitzirasan, at the time that they were being formed, Miyad Bo Bayom, on that very day, Heviyam El Ha'adam, Likros Lahem Shem, then they were brought to Adam in order to be named. Now, there's one problem with that. The birds! Right, to the birds. So I don't have a great resolution to this. I saw that some of the Mefarshei HaMedrash were sensitive to this, and they say this last point of Rashi, this last point, is not going on both. It's specifically referring to the animals. But Chutzmeza, I don't have an answer. I don't know if anyone else has any suggestions, but it's just impossible to put all that together straightforwardly, because as you correctly realized, it wouldn't work just from a strict factual perspective about the birds on that last point. But the main point here to see is that in a very immediate, and apparently if it's immediate, it must be important sense, Adam is given that role of naming the animals, and we also have learned one interesting, so to speak, especially for those who love birds, maybe this is even particularly interesting and noteworthy, that they were created not from the land and not from the water, but from some kind of mixture of the two. And again, it would be interesting because that, I think, would be the only species like that. Right? Everything else was either formed from the land or from the water. Birds, something unique about them, they're created. Again, what profound significance of that is, I'm not denying that there might be. I just don't know exactly what it is. But it is at least interesting to note. Okay, that's point. Yes, please.
They're the only warm-blooded animal that lays eggs.
I didn't know that. The question is, so what's the significance of that? Yeah, there's okay.
Platypus.
True.
The echidna.
Only warm-blooded, non-mammalian.
You guys are going way over my head. In fact, you're giving me nightmares of ninth grade biology. Okay, you have a, you guys do a research project and come back to us with a report, okay? I wish I knew. I don't know this kind of stuff. Okay. Which is why we probably all should. But we don't all know. Okay? We have a zoo rabbi and a zoo rabbitson in this year. I hope it doesn't happen to you, what happened to him. Okay. Continuing. Says Rashi another point. So we really saw two things. One is that Vayitzar here does not mean a new creation. It's referencing what already happened. Number two is the birds were created from this combination, this wet mud. And now number three, says Rashi, and it's interesting just to note, even though Rashi kind of mishes them all together like a chulent, that was based on a Gemara Masechta Chulin, and the next thing Rashi is quoting is from a different Midrashic source from the Pirkei Rav Eliezer. What does Rashi say? Ubedivrei Agada, in the words of the Agada, Yitzirazu, this instance, this example of where the word Yitzira is being used, Lashon Ridui. What does Ridui mean? To dominate, the kibush, to control or to subdue. Kamo, as the Pasuk tells us in Devarim, ki satsur el ha'ir, like you'll lay siege to the city. And how does that relate here? Shekvashan tachas yado shel adam, Because Adam subdued, controlled the beasts and the animals and the birds under his hand. Where is this coming from? Excuse me, not a particular Ezra. This is coming from a Bereishis Rabbah. Let's take a look at the Bereishis Rabbah. Not that Rashi didn't quote it faithfully, but it's actually more colorful and more vivid in its original form. It's also obviously lengthier, but we'll see, I think, an additional nuance or two, which Rashi doesn't even tell us. Look at the Medrash, the first source on your sheet. V'yisra Hashem Elokim min ha'adama. Ba'un kumi. They brought questions before Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. They asked the fans Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. K'siv, on the one hand, it says, V'yomer Elokim totse haaretz nefesh chaya lemina. Ma tamalomer v'yisra. So if we already know that Hashem did this, ma tamalomer, why do we need to be told now here in Perek Beis? V'yisra Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayas ha'sadeh. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai answers, Amar lehen, lahalon lebriya. In the first parak, we were told about them as the actual story to know about their bria, their creation. Vakan, and here, lekibush. And here it's being mentioned not just to describe their existence, their creation, but the fact that Adam is not just one of many in the garden. He is the king of the jungle. He is the one who is in charge, has kibush over all of them. And then again, citing the last proof text. So first of all, that one phrase, which I have underlined, kan lahalan labriya v'kan l'kibush, is a very pithy, very sharp, succinct way of making that pasuk. You kind of lose that oomph in Rashi's formulation, so I thought it was just worth seeing that. But furthermore, I think is very interesting, is the continuation of the Medrash, which Rashi does not tell us about. Continue, look inside. Amar Rav Acha, end of the third line. The Shosha Kadosh Baruch Hu Lebras Es HaAdam. When Hashem came to create man, Nimloch B'Malach HaYashareis, he took counsel with the angels. Where do we know that from? That's the famous phrase which we studied last year. Na'as HaAdam, the plural, Hashem says, let us make man. What does that mean? So the classic interpretation cited by Rashi from Chazal is Hashem is taking counsel with the angels. However, as a Chazal, not every Medrash has this, but there's at least one strain of thought in Chazal, which we have also seen before, which this Medrash now references. The angels were, you know, if you're asking our opinion, the angels said, well, maybe we're not so thrilled with the plan. So the angels say to Hashem, Amr Lehen. So he says, God says, Nasa, Adam, we should make man. Amru Lo, they say to him, Adam, Zeh, Matevo, you know, what's up with that? Who's he? Why should we recreate Adam? What's so big and special about him? Amar Lahem, look at this. Chachmaso Meruba Mishalchem. He's wiser than you. How did he prove it? Havi Lifnayam as the Behema. Hashem brings in front of the angels animals, wild animals, Vachaya, the domesticated animals, both and the birds. Amar Lahem, Hashem says to the angels. Ze Mashemo, animal X, what's its name? They didn't know how to name the animal, even the platypus. They didn't know how to do it. Hey, if you're in the Fnayodam, but then it was like, you know, it was a reality show. Bring it before Adam. Amar lo, zeh mashemo, what is its name? Amar zeh shor, it's an ox, a chamor, a donkey, a sus, it's a horse, it's a gamel, it's a camel. You know, boom, 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 boom. The angels could not perform under pressure, and yet Adam could. Chachmaso meruba mishalchem, Hashem says. You see that he has more wisdom than you. The Medrash continues really fascinatingly. V'ata mashimcha. According to this version of the Medrash, God asks this creature, what should your own name be? It wasn't God who named even Adam. Adam, apparently, according to this, names himself. Amar lo, ani na likare Adam. I think it's a good thing that I should be called Adam. Why? Shinevresi min ha'adama. Because I was created from the ground. Let's pause here for a moment. That's the first time that we have this sense in the Medrash of a rationale behind the choice of a name. Now, you could read this particular example in two ways. Very superficially, or perhaps more simply, you would say, it's describing his, you know, very basic, just, you know, where did he come from? Since he came from the ground, let's call him Adam. Adam, Adama. But it's also, I think, likely that what Chazal is getting at here, and we'll see this echoed at the end of the shir as well, in a few minutes, that a theme which is recurrent through our tradition in Chazal, and that is the profundity and the wisdom of names. Now this notion, which many of us, myself included, cling to, which is that there's a siyata d'shmaya above every parent when they make that choice, that's not, frankly, being sourced here. But the notion that when the Torah itself, or when Hashem, or when Adam gives a name, again, you and I are not necessarily on that level of wisdom, that's a separate assumption, I'm not denying it, but that's not sourced here. But that would say a much bigger jump, frankly. But the idea that when the Torah, when Hashem, or in this case, when Adam gives a name, it's, as the saying goes, kishmo kainhu. It's speaking to the essence. So on some level, you could suggest, according to this, that Adam's name is not just coincidental, but that's speaking very much to the essence of man. And again, without being getting too much in my pulpit rabbi mode, but you have a beautiful drusha here, which I think is very consistent with themes which we have learnt here, and we know generally, of course, what's the whole mission of humankind in this world? To take our base ingredients and to elevate them. We're made as Adam, right? We're not Malachim, we're made as Adam, but we're supposed to refine that essence. And therefore the name Kishmo Kainhu. And therefore that explains, and again it's interesting that it's never explicit in the Medrash, but I think it's clear this is a gist. Why is it that the angels didn't know how to name the animals? If it was just arbitrary, what, they were having a creative off day, they weren't so open. The answer is, on some level, apparently there's a wisdom that Adam had that they didn't have. And what is that wisdom? They didn't have that sense. And we'll see explicitly in a mefarish towards on the second half of the sheet, this notion is specifically in explaining the pasuk chaf, that that's what Adam was doing when he was naming the animals. He was perceiving what is their essence, and on some level, and this is not remotely my expertise, on some level, the word shor, and specifically, I didn't put it on the Marmakom sheet, we wouldn't have had time to do it, but this is actually one of the locus classicus, one of the prime places where you have some mefarshim speak about the uniqueness of the Hebrew language, in Lashon HaKodesh, Yehuda Halevi, and the Kuzari speaks here, where how the word ox is meaningless. Ox, if it's meaningful, is that it's a translation of the word shor. But shor, or sus, or... So there's something about that word which speaks to the essence of what we call a horse. And Adam was able to intuit that and therefore gave them the names. The angels couldn't. And again, it's interesting that that's not ever explicit in the Medrash, although it's clear, I think, to me, the gist. And we'll see it, as I said, in subsequent Mefarshim. But working backwards, when Adam gives the first explanation, we don't get an explanation for the sus. I wish we did. I'm fascinated to know what about a horse is a sus. But Adam, at least, we do know. Adam, we do know. And the Medrash, if this hasn't been fascinating enough, saves almost the best for last. Look at the Medrash once again, back inside. Four lines up from the bottom. In the middle of that line, in a comma, after the comma, it should be five lines. V'ani, says Hashem, and me, pray tell, mashimi. What should my name be? What would you have said? Think about it. What would you have said? I don't know. Omer lei, l'cho no'el yikares Adonai. You should be called that name. Why? Shata Adon Chabri Osecha, because you are the master. Now, we know that there are all sorts of other names for Hashem, but at least according to this version in Chazal, what is, at least in terms of our relationship with Hashem, what is his most essential characteristic? That he is the Adon. And therefore, we are the Adam, and he is the Adon. And as close as those two words almost sound to each other, how wide a difference there is between the two, to be an Adam and to be an Adon.
It's interesting because the Torah begins with Elohim. I mean, he's identified as Elohim.
Right, right.
So what you would think, I mean,
right.
In terms of...
Well, you recall from last year, we spoke about Mitzvah Din, Mitzvah Rachamim. All right, 100%, 100%, 100%.
You could deduce in this passage from the fact that Adam gives the reason for his own name and for giving the Rabbanish Hamid.
Yeah.
Adonai, that he must have given, had a reason also for naming. In other words, there must
Yes, for the animals, yes. 100%. That's the point I'm making, 100%. Yes, exactly. That is exactly the point. That is why 100%. Now, we don't, I wish we knew. What's the shore? What's the set? What's the sus? But clear, and again, it's that which the malachim were lacking. And again, you can imagine now, what, I don't know, who's the author, the original author of the phrase, knowledge is power? Somebody wise. Somebody with knowledge, presumably. We always exaggerate the importance of our own talents. That's human nature. But clearly here, now getting back to the beginning, of what, why is all this in the same Medrash? It's all nice and good. Well, how did the Medrash start? Medrash started talking about, as Rashi told us, the Vayitzer here means kibush, control. So if you put it all together, a very beautiful, interesting picture emerges from this interpretation of Chazal. Why does, again, it's like the Medrash is like, again, you don't get any of this from Rashi. You know, again, you get the basic picture, but you don't get the full picture. It's not the widescreen. You don't get the whole thing. What is so beautiful in this Medrash is that what emerges is, why is Adam here? Why do we have this sense that it's Dafke here in Perek Beis and this Pasuk that we have Adam's crowning superiority over the rest of the kingdom, the rest of the garden? Because he has the he has that supreme knowledge to the extent that he not only has an understanding of himself, he even has this knowledge instantaneously. He's just been created. Chazal say in other places, the first hour of his life, of the essence of every single creature, so they said that he could give them the name. If Hashem had to ask him for that help, and more certainly, clearly, so that Medrash makes clear, the angels didn't have his chokhmah. Do you think the animals did? The Medrash is, again, it's a developing Medrash, but in the big, you take a step back and look at the whole Medrash, I think that's what the very fascinating point is being driven home. Why is it that this Vayitzer is Ridui is control? Apparently, it is the knowledge that is the power. Adam has this God-given, I mean, without being cliche, this God-given ability, this God-given intuition. And again, it's not that he was stronger. Adam is not the strongest, necessarily. Humans are not the strongest. But we have, again, this ties into so many other things, the definition of Tzelem Elokim and all these things. But again, that's what gives us, that's the Kivshuha. Again, it's that knowledge that we have that gives us not only the imperative to control and to have dominion over the world, which we've spoken about in the past, but here you have the sense of the superiority, which is linked not to anything else other than this specific capacity. And again, the Medrash vividly portrays that by describing, at the very least, the kind of head-on, you know, competition with the angels, which apparently was no competition at all, as the angels, if you just take the Medrash very simply, are 0 for 4. They didn't know who those animals were, and Adam, time and time again, did. To me, it's really fascinating.
What does it have in the first part where Hashem gives a Vayivarech Osam, and he says, Puruhu Amalu Asar.
Vechemshuha.
Redu, see, the Redu, you see that Lashon too.
Right.
The Gassiam of Opashimai Mikol Chayra Mesasal Aris. So it was a divine blessing that gave Adam the capacity to do that.
But exactly what you don't get in the first paragraph. Again, that there's a command to Kivshuha, we knew already. Correct, but what you don't get until the second paragraph, and you really don't get until you get the Medrash in the second paragraph, is this understanding of where it comes from and why it is. Yeah.
Is that the critical factor that Adam has that the angels don't have?
Right.
It allows them to have that additional.
What's the or?
Or is it just the redundancy of Vayitzer? Is it the Nefesh Chaya applies to everything, not just to Adam, but.
Oh, you're saying technically where Nefesh Chaya applies, right? Oh, I see. Okay, good.
If I'm a subject of name, even though we pronounce the Yud Kei Vav Kei using Adam,
right.
It's the Torah. I mean, referring to Hashem, his name is Elohim or Yud Kei Vav Kei.
Right.
So there you go.
This name you're saying is not really there.
The characteristic of Hashem is Kahoya Hovavia.
Right.
You want to look at.
Yeah, you could have. I would have thought all those things.
You would think that if this were the real, that would have appeared in the Torah.
Yeah, so it's not our topic. But yes, if one was having a topic, no, really, I'm not being facetious there, or trying to be dismissive. If our study would be, you know, what is the essence of God and, you know, a real philosophy of religion. So this is certainly part of the puzzle. And there's no question this Medrash is only one source, But there's a famous medrash, and really it's actually, I mentioned him before in a different context, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari has a very famous essay where he discusses that the different names of Hashem imply different things, and which one is the essence, and etc. And this, I don't know offhand how to put it all together, but there's no question one a comprehensive approach would have to reckon with this medrash. And your point would be well taken then. Okay? Now let's just... You know, it really relates to the next pasuk or two, but just since we're here anyway, let's finish the medrash. Three lines after the ellipse, the three dots. Chazar ve'eviron lefanav zugov. So after all of this, so to speak, then Hashem, you know, get this exact, actually in the pasuk, Hashem brings not only all the animals a second time, not just Hashem, Adam can name them, but then there's a second parade, and this is a co-ed parade, and not separate seating. They're going together, the men and the women, horse, the male, the female, they're all going together as a pair. As you'll see momentarily what's clearly being addressed as a romantic, loving couple, so to speak. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Horse and Mr. and Mrs. Ox and Mr. and Mrs. Elephant. What happened? Huh?
It wouldn't be Mr. and Mrs. Ox.
Okay, well. Oh, fine. Be picky. Amr Lakol. So Adam says, "Lekol yesh ben zug, v'li a ben zug." Everyone else, I believe politically correct, has a partner. I don't have a partner. Ula Adam, and now getting to the next pasuk chav, lo matza ezer kenego. Adam looking around, they're all taken, right? He's the only one who came to the dance without a date. They're all taken. So the Medrash asks, what's the obvious question? Nu Rabbanu Shlomo, why not? Especially since we all know how the story is going to end. No, he's not going home alone. So why did he have to come alone? Right? Yes, exactly. But why? So, you know, there are all sorts of reasons these things happen in real life, but why did it happen to Adam? It's Mahad. The Medrash says it's surprising, it's shocking, underlined. But Lama lo bara lo tchila. Why didn't Hashem make Chava right there to begin with? This is classic. This is Marriage Counseling Shalom Bayis 101. Alatiba Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem knew and already had the foresight, the knowledge to know Shu Asid, and it's not so far into the future. It's in the Sheva Brachos. Asid Likro Salah Tagar. Soon Adam would be complaining about Chava. And therefore, Hashem didn't want to have the complaint. You know, why'd you give her to me? Therefore, he waited until he asked for her. Then again, pasuk which we'll get to next time. Hashem, you know, then Hashem only once he asked. You know, Hashem was so to speak keeping it in the back pocket, right? And Lahavdil, not only is this classic and important Shalom Bayis counseling 101. But it's also, in a sense, because Hashem has the relationship with us, it's parenting 101, right? How often, you know, when we're smart enough to think of it, do we have that sense where we know our child's likely going to complain about X or Y, and we make sure that we'll have it, you know, so to speak, documented, you know, figuratively, that that's what you ask for. It's not that I'm pushing you to do something. This happens all the time, especially with the older kids. You know, they complain about who knows what. You know, that's what you wanted. And when you point that out to them, you know, they probably have a different excuse, but at least, you know, you've made the point. And again, who thought of all this? Again, Chazal said that's already going on in Bertel's mind. You know, it's cliche, it's classic, you know, literally, you know, Avi and Harriet, you know, it's not, you know.
That's why Adam couldn't get away with Aisha's Ziani.
Right.
It didn't work.
Right, that's right. This is what you know, it's a full package. It's a full package. She has Milos and Chastronos, like we all, you know, I mean, I'm serious. This is, the variations of this, less stark, are used, whether it be by rabbis or marriage counselors, all the time. This is a real... You know, people complain about all sorts of things that they really wanted. And then they decide that they don't want them. And usually these things aren't surprises. Usually people didn't trick us. We knew what we were getting. Now all of a sudden we have buyer's regret. I mean, this is human nature. And it's, the reason it's human nature is because it's in the Bria from the very outset. Okay, let's move on. So all of this, just from that one little Rashi, and the Medrash that Rashi was using. Now, on this last point of the superiority and this notion that what's being implied here is not just Adam happens to be naming the creatures, but that in so doing he is demonstrating his redia, his dominion, and his control. So it's interesting. I saw two of the more modern, certainly compared to the Rishonim or Chazal, two of the more modern commentaries both make the same point. Commentaries that you've certainly been familiar with in our shir in the past, the Oznaim LeTorah, Zalman Sarotskin, and Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. They both make the point, and this gets to, again, in isolation, you don't appreciate it, but I hope through the way we studied the Pesukim initially and what we've seen until now, you'll have a greater appreciation for it. What was one of the inconsistencies that we noticed between the two Pesukim? Right, what did we mention? We mentioned this already? That what Behema, the domesticated animals, aren't mentioned at first, so only, in this case, we're surprised with them the second time. So both Rav Hirsch and Rav Sarotskin both notice that, and they both give more or less the same explanation, which fits in to this larger theme of what's going on here. This isn't just naming, you know, accidentally, so to speak, but there's this larger issue of that naming represents control. So take a look at the Oznaim LeTorah, for example. Ubehema lo hiskir, how come in the first pasuk domesticated animals is not mentioned? Ulhala nemar lachol behema, and subsequently in the next pasuk the behemas are mentioned. So obviously he named everything, including the domesticated. Right? The reason we know what a cat is a cat and a dog, or a dog may not have been always domesticated, but whatever. We all know what, you know, a cow. We know these names because Adam named them. So why is it not mentioned in the opening pasuk? So it says his name, Torah. Lohayet sarach lahavi el Adam. Hashem was in a sense forcing these animals to Adam for the parade. He didn't have to force the behema. Only the chayas hasadav of Hashemayim, only the wild animals and the birds, she'enam berubam b'nei tarbus in the Adam, because they're generally not domesticated. They're generally not do well in a domesticated environment. Lefichat hei v'osam Hashem al Adam. There had to be coercion to bring them in a domesticated context for Adam to name them. Shikril ham shemos. Avaloha yitzarach lahavi es habehem el. You didn't have to force. He has to exert control over the domesticated animals. He ain't mishta metas miradam, because these domesticated animals are not fearful or in any way antagonistic towards being with mankind. Ubaba atzma, they come on their own, they love. Osha halach adam elah, or for that matter, Adam went out towards them. Lefichach la nizkira behema bahava'a. Therefore, in the original pasuk, it doesn't mention bringing the behemos because that has to do with control, which again is the theme of the original Medrash. And Adam already had control just by the natural propensity, the instincts, the personality, if you will, of these animals. Just to see the way Rav Hirsch says it more succinctly, this way of taking the yitzer as forcing or control, which is, again he's alluding to the Medrash, seems confirmed by the fact that behema is missing here and only chayas asada and oaf are mentioned. While in verse 20, Pasuk Kav, behema is specifically mentioned. Behema would not have to be forced to be brought to man. By their nature, they submit themselves to man, and of their own free will, they live in human surroundings. Now, as an aside, I mentioned, Harry, you know, a global issue you were touching on about the nature of God. So I don't want to get into it, and I don't know, it's hard to know how literally to take this last phrase of Rav Hirsch, but as I was reading it this afternoon, it really struck me. Is Rav Hirsch saying that animals have free will? That's the language that he uses. That's not the language, for example, that Rav Sarotskin was using. Rav Sarotskin almost was saying it's not a question of free will. The way they're programmed is to be domesticated. I don't want to make too much of it, especially since it's not our topic. But, you know, it is, put it on your Bechir Chafshis list. You know, as you collect sources wherever they come, you know, you could keep this in mind. You know, especially if you're an animal lover, I guess it's a really good source. Since I'm not, I'm bothered by it. But this issue of do they have free will, not free will, I don't know. I mean, it's not our issue, it's just something that struck me. Right. Just struck me as I was reading it. Okay. Let's continue and let's see another two or three points. We'll try to move quickly because on the next page we have a complicated, the Machlokas, getting back to the Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra, and Rashbaum that we discussed at the opening of how to read the last phrase in the Pasuk. But just mention the Sforno and the Chizkuni on the words Vayevei El Adam, that they were brought, the animals were brought to Adam. So the Sforno, and this can be connected to the Sforno that we mentioned last week, and I think it was Bernie who wasn't so who saw that sforno last week, I think in a particular light. So I think this sforno, depending on how you read it, could be a raya to you, again. But Laman Yake, why were all these animals brought to Adam? And this is really the point which I alluded to at the opening of this year, which Ruthie Shane really made last week, which is that even though it looks like this is a total digression, Adam is alone, so we want to go right to Chava being created and him not being alone. Why do I have this whole thing with the animals? So what Ruthie mentioned really is already mentioned by some of these Mefarshim. So he should realize that in order to satisfy his loneliness, it's not going to be cured or satisfied by something that already exists. Depending on how you want to focus, how you want to translate that word, la'avdo, but either minimally, without getting into that, you see, says the Sforno, that why is this parade necessary? He said Adam should appreciate, you should think about what the essence of all these animals are, and in so doing, not only does he come to know what their name should be, but he also knows that none of them are compatible with him. Now, again, it is worth noting that the way the Sforno phrases compatibility between Adam and Chava is her being la'avdo. Now, I would read that, as I read the Sforno last week, which is, as I said, like in that social contract theory, the notion, again, that why was it Lo Tovios Adam Levado, the Sforno said, because there's only so many things that one person can do, and if I have to spend my whole day worrying about every aspect of my survival, I won't be around, I won't have enough time or energy to worry about the more elevated goals of life. So therefore, if you have a partner, you can split the work and both have time for this more elevated things. This elevated goal of, you know, whatever the, you know, ideals of spirituality, etc., of life. So I would read this Sforno in light of that. But the main purpose I mentioned today, again, is the notion of what this parade is not. It's not a diversion. It's not distracting. It's specifically connected to why there's a need for Chava. And the Chizkuni, for example, adds another point on that notion, which is what isn't mentioned in the first pasuk or the second pasuk. We got wild animals, domesticated animals, birds. What are we lacking? Right? And my kids love fish, and it's the only animals that I'm ever going to let them own in my house. So what about the fish? What about the fish? First of all, we don't know who named them. That's very good. But more, so the point is, I think according to this Chizkuni, maybe Adam did name them. But why did they not have to be brought before him in this dramatic moment? Because there's another goal, as we just saw from the Sforno, not just that he should name the animals, but that he should realize who is for him and who isn't. Says the Chizkuni, Dogim lo heviki b'toch ha'mayim heim ve'enim yotzim v'im yotzim meitzim ve'en redia aleihem. First of all, man doesn't have control over them as things on the actual land. But also, I think part of the factor is they're so far removed, there's no havamina of compatibility. They're in the water. He's on the land. They, if they come into the land, will die. What's left unsaid, but is equally true, we can't live in the water. Right? And at least for some compatibility, they do have, living together is apparently, even in Gan Eden, a prerequisite for compatibility. Okay, could be, right, okay. I'm not sure what that means, but maybe this is it. And since I never thought of you, Eli, as the huge Ein Hara man, or expert. No, don't be modest, Eli. Where's that, where's your red bracelet?
Right, there's a tradition that there's no Ein Hara that applies to fish. That's why I think there's certain times when we eat fish, like Rosh Hashanah, something like that, but I think it's consistent with this theme that there's no dominion on fish in a certain sense.
I just want to mention, before we turn the page to the last issue, the last source I have here, the Aslam the Torah, I saved it for last just because he's the first of the sources we've seen until now who's specifically commenting on the second Pasuk, Pasuk Chaf. But once again, Rav Sarovskin brings us back one final nuance, one final piece of the puzzle to this theme which we've been primarily focusing on so far, which is the notion that everything that's going on here has a hidden layer of meaning, maybe even primary meaning, which it is to demonstrate Adam's superiority and control over the creatures. So we know already from the Medrash that the fact that he can name them, and so to speak, they don't name him, the angels can't even name him, that shows the superiority of man and their control. Furthermore, we therefore understand why he needs Chava, no one else is going to be appropriate for him. And finally, that we've seen until now, and now that explains why Behemoth wasn't mentioned in the first pasuk, and again mentioned in the second pasuk, and thirdly and finally, the Aznayim LaTorah adds, which I don't believe was in the earlier sources. I think this piece of the puzzle he adds himself is that in light of this theme, he explains the idea which concludes the pasuk, which is after seeing all the animals, lo matza ezer kenego, that Adam didn't find somebody he's compatible. So again, it wasn't just a sense of compatibility, says Rav Sarotskin. Ayde kriyas shemos, l'nefashos, kol chai, after naming all of these living creatures, hera Adam harishon, shechachmasa meruba, afil men ha-malachim, he's alluding to the Medrash, that you see, Adam realized himself, self-awareness. Adam realized himself that he had this incredible chachma beyond not just the animals, but even the angels. L'fichach, and therefore, he reads this pasuk in light of, L'adam lo matza ezer kenego, b'li b'ruei mala u'mata. B'chol b'ruei mala v'mata. Why did all of a sudden Adam realize his existential loneliness, that there was nothing that's compatible for him? Because of his superiority, number one. Number two, a nuance which we never would have had, I think, without this Rav Sarotskin. It doesn't just mean the animals, right? If you could conceive, which is hard for us to do, but if you could conceive of Adam having been, quote-unquote, married to one of the animals, had it been theoretically compatible, why can't you have conceived that Adam would have been with the angels? And certainly we know mythology and other ancient traditions, right? They did have these unions of these gods or these angels and mankind, right? That's not a foreign notion in world thought. But says Rav Sarotskin, not only do we, so to speak, obviously deny that on every other level, but he says here, there's again, it's an added poignancy. Adam realized he was totally alone, not just on this world, not just, so to speak, below, in the world below, but even in the world top. He was completely alone. There was nothing in heavens or earth that was compatible and appropriate for him until Chav is created. Okay, we have a few more minutes left, about 5-6 minutes left. Let's just quickly...
Maybe his ability to name the animals and their names is their essence. That's where the loneliness comes from, because he realizes...
Yes. Yes, yes, I think that's what they're getting at. I think that's what they're getting at. Just so you should know, again, even though it's a famous idea, but it's not explicit in all of the sources, but one of the sources that mentions this idea of the names relating to the essence and Adam having that superior knowledge and ability to intuit the essence and never give the names, that's the Sforno I have here on top of the second page. Now, but we won't go into that. Now, we have a few more minutes left. Let's just see the three-way machlokas, and with this we'll close. The three-way machlokas between Rashi, Ramban, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban, here in this Ramban, here in Perek, Beis, Pasuk Yotes. Now again, the phrase which is troublesome is the end of the Pasuk. Adam has shown all the animals, he gives them the names, V'chosh, Yikra, Lo, and everything which he names, again, it's a singular, even though I might have expected a plural, but I mean each animal individually, Adam, that Adam names them, Nefesh Chaya Hu Shemo. What do you mean Nefesh Chaya Hu Shemo is? Sus is its name. Chatul is its name. Gamal is its name. What do you mean Nefesh Chaya is its name? How do you read the last phrase? So take a look at Rashi. Rashi is already aware of it. Rashi says in the next Dibur HaMaskil, V'chol Sheyikra Lo, Sar Sehu. You have to invert. You cannot read and translate the Pasuk as it's written. You have to invert the Pasuk. Upar Shehu, and you have to explain it as follows. Kol Nefesh Chaya, any living soul, Asher Yikro Lo HaAdam Shem, which Adam would give its name to, Hu Shmo LaOlam, that will be its eternal name. Now that may have been what one of you, I can't remember who, was trying to say in the Pasuk. But again, you see from Rashi, that's, you're forcing it into the Pasuk. That's not how the words flow. You have to Sar Seyu, says Rashi, you have to invert the Pasuk. And again, as I may have mentioned to you in this context, and I still mentioned in other Gemara contexts, I remember one of the first, maybe the first year I was in Rav Rosenzweig's shir, he mentioned, as like, again, it's one of these life learning lessons you never forget, that when we think of pshat, and often we associate Rashi with pshat, but when we think of pshat by any commentator, it doesn't just mean, as we often usually translate, as the literal translation, as opposed to something midrashic. Pshat means the most simple explanation. Sometimes, or usually, that's the thing that's most closely to the literal translation. But when the literal translation is impossible, for whatever reason, so then, not only do you have to give a different pshat, that different explanation is not some drash, that is pshat. Pshat is the most simple understanding, either because that's the literal translation of the words, or because of some other reason makes the literal translation impossible, and therefore, according to said Mefaresh, this is the most simple pshat. So what Rashi's saying here, which on some level you would say this is not pshat, Rashi's admitting you have to change up the order of the words. It's like a scramble, you know, you throw it up and. But the point that is, according to Rashi, that's still pshat, because according to Rashi, there is no other way to understand the pasuk as written. Now the Ibn Ezra, which is quoted here in the Ramban, The Ibn Ezra seems to more or less agree. The Ibn Ezra, if you will, if you put them together, the Ibn Ezra adds one more thing. Take a look where I have from Rabbeinu Avraham. After the second sentence, the Ramban always talks about the Ibn Ezra's Rabbeinu Avraham, Rabbi Avraham, Amar, Ki Lamid Asher Yikra Lo. That Lamid in the word of Lo, which we said is hard to understand the Lo here, Nimshach, it's really connected or needs to be reapplied. Namely, V'chol Asher Yikra Lo Ha'adam Le Nefesh Chaya, Hu Shmo Le'olam. It has to be reapplied, so the pasuk should really be understood as if it was written, V'chol Asher Yikra Lo Ha'adam, and whatever Adam called to it, L'nefesh chaya, hu shmo li'olam. To this living soul, to whatever the animal is, it is its name forever. I think that's what Harry was trying to say before. But again, the point is, you need to do this rearranging. You need to add this lamed, the Ibn Ezra says. Again, without that lamed in the original, in the actual pasuk, it's hard to say what you said. So between Rashi and, I think Rashi and Ibn Ezra, they're basically agreeing that you can't take the pasuk as is. You got to play with it one way or the other. And then you basically get the same idea. Most, I think, many Mefarshim, I should say most, I think go in this direction one way or the other. The famous one who disagrees with this and who wants to take pshat the way we usually mean it. What does the pasuk say? You can't start rearranging words. Who are you? That is the Ramban. Take a look at the next comment of the Ramban. Yitachein, says the Ramban, shi perusho b'inyan ha'ezer. We can give it a different explanation concerning the Ezer, the helper that is mentioned in the previous pasuk, the Ezer Kenegdo. V'hakavana lomar. What is the intention here? And again, I don't remember who said this. Ki ha'adam nefesh chaya. Right. Until now, who's the nefesh chaya? The animals. That's who we're talking about in the pasuk. We're not talking about Adam. We're not talking about Chava. In this pasuk, we're talking about the animals. Yet, Ramban says, again, so according to Rashi and Ibn Ezra, the problem is it doesn't make sense. So Ibn Ezra says, no, the focus, you got to read the pasuk literally, but you still have to make a jump, which, you know, I don't know if he admits it, that it's a jump, but it certainly is a jump. But you assume that the pasuk is not referring to the animals, but in this case, HaKavan Ki Adam Nefesh Chaya. So how does this come out? What does that mean? Kamosha, again, he gives a proof where sometimes Nefesh Chaya, we know, refers to man, but which I referred to earlier in the Shir, Perek Beis Pasuk Zion. Namely, the Havi Lafan of Hamin and Kulan. Hashem brought all the different species in front of Adam. V'chol min mehem shiyakru'enu ha'adam b'shmo. And any of these species that man would call b'shmo in his own name. In other words, again, this is like a casting call. Lahavdil, this is like Cinderella, right? He's looking for who's the shoe going to fit on. Who is my soulmate? Who is going to be the animal, the species, the bird that's going to be my right one? Says the Ramban, that's what it meant. Anyone who, about any other animal that Adam would have called Nefesh Chaya. Nefesh Chaya, here says Ramban, not your point in the beginning of the year notwithstanding, is signature to him, to Adam. And therefore, that would have been his way of putting his stamp on animal X or Y, that you are a Nefesh Chaya like me. You are essentially compatible with me. V'yomer boshu Nefesh Chaya kamoso. Anyone who would have had Adam said that about any of them, Hu Yeshemo, that would have been its name, via Lola Ezer Kenegdo. And that animal, that species, would have been Adam's helpmate, would have been his, so to speak, Bashert. Hu Karl Kulam, but so that's what could have happened. That's what Adam anticipated happening. But Nu Sof Kol Maisa, what did happen? He went through all of them. V'lo Motza La'atzmo Ezer, he found no helper for himself. Ad Shiyikra Lo Nefesh Chaya B'Shmo, that he could call Nefesh Chaya like himself. And therefore, comes the next pasuk, he needs to go to sleep, and a new creature, Chava, needs to be created. Where, which pasuk, which? Hushimo, like his name. Hushimo, like his name. Not Hushimo, it will be the animal's name. That Nefesh Chaya is Hushimo. That's the signature name of Adam. And again, he has to fill in gaps. Even the Ramban has to fill in gaps. What I want to point out to you, just to leave with you with this, is that this phrase, which again is not like one of the famous phrases we think of in the creation story, but this phrase is so difficult that Sof Kol Maisa, not Rashi, not Ramban, and not Ibn Ezra, none of them really translated as is without some creativity on their part. Either Rashi juggles the order of the words, or Ramban adds a lamed where there was no lamed, or the Eben Ezra, in theory, can translate it as is, but not only does he have to assume, like no other Mefarish, that Nefesh Chaya is not referring to, is referring to the human, not the Adam, not the animals, but more than that, there's all this gap and filler that you have to add in, because as Bernie alluded to, the Pasuk ends with Shmo, so now, according to the Ramban, Nefesh Chaya is his name. But what's the but? So the but is the Yikra Adam Shemos. Then you have to, you know, so to speak, fill in the gaps. And that's why he was calling all the other animals names, looking for who is going to be the one he can tag Nefesh Chaya, my name. And then when he didn't find anyone, Chaf Aleph, he needs to go to sleep. Chav needs to be created. So it works. They all work in theory, but none of them work easily. But that's not a criticism supposed to be given any of the Mefarshim. It's because the Pasuk is so difficult. Okay, just please note, is everyone here on the Shomri email list? You should be, of course, for a variety of reasons. Well, if not, then please do me a favor, and I don't know if I'll know in time to mention it in the bulletin this week, but check next week. There, I may have a wedding in New York next Wednesday, so I may not be here. We certainly would indicate it if there's no shear on the email list, and otherwise, try to call the office, remember Wednesday, to find out if there's a shear.
Rabbi,
they could get engaged tonight, get married tomorrow. What world are you living in, Bernie?